Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features Chris Walsh, CEO at Colorado-based MJ Biz Daily and MJ Biz Con. This episode was recorded over the phone on September 7th, 2021.
Chris, again, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. We're excited to get together in person again.
Yes. Yeah, it's been an interesting ride for you. And I kind of want to start from the beginning of your journey. I mean, you originally went to school for journalism before becoming a traditional industry journalist and then finally becoming the founding editor at MJ Biz Daily. Can you kind of tell me what the transition was from traditional, you know, journalism into cannabis journalism, and what was the impetus to make you want to make that leap?
Yeah, I started my career in 2000 in mainstream journalism at kind of Metro newspapers as a business reporter and then editor. But along the way, you know, in 2000, there was the high tech, it's kind of the apex of the high tech boom. And then it collapsed like several months after I started, and I was covering high tech. So, you know, everything was about layoffs and cutbacks and companies going out of business. And along the way, all those forces started to affect media. And so it wasn't a really great industry to be in. So I was always in the back of my head, kind of like, what am I going to do? Mainstream media isn't doing well. So I started getting my MBA and moved to South Korea and worked at a newspaper there. But when I came back to the U.S. in 2011, I was kind of reconsidering what I was going to do, finishing that MBA, and didn't want to really stay in mainstream journalism. And the opportunity came to do something for the cannabis industry. Because when I left in 2009 for South Korea, there were no dispensaries in Denver, and that's where I was based. And I'd worked as a reporter there. We weren't covering that as an industry because there wasn't an industry. And just two short years later, when I came back, there were more dispensaries in Denver than Starbucks. That's the famous saying at that time, but there really were. And it just kind of exploded out of nowhere. So I just really felt it was this exciting, strange new industry cropping up. And it was different from what I had been doing, and just felt it was a good fit to try something different. And the two women who founded the company hired me to launch what became MJ Biz Daily and MJ Biz Con, and you know, had no idea where it was going to go, but just was ready for something different.
Well, and that original co-founder who you took the CEO position from in, I believe it was late 2019, if I'm not mistaken, which was Cassandra Farrington. You know, that's an interesting time to take over the CEO position, is right before the pandemic hit, or, you know, a few short months before the pandemic hit. How has that transition been, especially considering the craziness of the world, you know, around us?
Well, so along the way, I helped launch MJ Biz Daily and then built our content team and strategy and helped build the events and then move more to the business side, utilizing my MBA along the way. And so you're right, at the very beginning of 2020, it was when it was official that I became CEO and had a good handle on the company, you know, have been deeply involved since the beginning, but was not prepared for a global pandemic that of all the business models out there affected ours just as badly as, you know, airlines, hospitality, you name it, those that were directly impacted by the inability to get people together. So it was... you know, it was several months after starting, you know, we were in a situation where our revenue was down significantly. We didn't know where this pandemic was, when it was going to end or how severe it was going to get. And so it was a really, really tough year of just trying to figure out how we can get through this as a company, but also continue to serve the industry that desperately needs good information, good market research, and good opportunities to get together to you know, push their businesses forward, to network and all that. So we had to rethink everything we were doing. And so I'm not going to lie, it was really, really grueling. And I talked to people in the cannabis industry all the time. And, you know, in many cases, the cannabis industry, as we know, did well. So it was very hard because the industry we served was at least doing a decent job in a terrible situation, if not thriving in a lot of areas. But with the way we're structured and what we do, we were in the opposite situation and still trying to serve it, keep our reach and keep our value to the industry. So yeah, I learned a lot of good lessons during the last 18 months, for sure. Well,
did it surprise you that dispensaries, cultivators, manufacturers, the whole of the cannabis industry was deemed kind of medically essential in a lot of states? Did that kind of like spark something in you to say, holy shit, this is a little bit different than kind of what I expected the industry to take from the pandemic?
Yeah, and that's, I think that's really the silver lining that everyone should grasp onto and hold on to and look to as a sign of how things have changed. Because I mean, when you look at it, out of all the things that were forced to shut down or scale back dramatically, cannabis being deemed essential in many states, and not only the medical side, the recreational side as well, it's just astonishing. So there's no way I would have predicted that that would have happened had I known the situation that was in front of all of us, that out of all these businesses, cannabis dispensaries and stores could stay open. And if you go back to when we started in 2011, I mean, that I couldn't have even dreamed that up, you know, in my wildest dreams, because back then the stigma was huge. We didn't even know if this industry was going to be around in 6 months or a year. There were crackdowns by the federal government, especially on the, you know, California, Montana, Colorado, Washington. So if you fast forward a decade from then, you've got an industry that's deemed essential in something we have never experienced in our lifetimes that shut most of the economy down, is really should give us all hope of where we're at now and what the potential is going forward.
Well, when you're looking at the totality of the industry, you know, being in it as long as you have, you know, obviously MJ Biz Daily is the forefront of a lot of information that comes out. I mean, you guys' reporting is second to none. When you're seeing so much information come out of the industry, what's the one thing across the spectrum that surprised you the most?
I guess it would tie into what I was just saying about how public perception has changed dramatically and very quickly. When you look at how long this kind of war on marijuana and the attitudes and the push by, you know, government officials, not only in the US, but around the world, to kind of demonize this plant and say, this is terrible for you. And then in this just short period of time, it's dramatically changed. You have mainstream companies that are getting involved. You have mainstream professionals and executives and entrepreneurs and investors. You have major, you know, business publications covering this seriously. You have people finding new careers, people starting new businesses all over the place. And it's and the public opinion, you know, again, that the polling, whether it's, you know, Fox News or CNN or a, you know, conservative nonprofit or whatever, they all come to the same conclusion, more or less. And that's that the vast majority of people support some form of legalization in the U.S. I couldn't have dreamed of this situation a decade ago.
Do you think that the 2018 Farm Bill and kind of the proliferation of CBD in the general mainstream market kind of helped made that push for those, say, larger scale companies to finally make the jump into the cannabis industry?
You know, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but, you know, you just mentioned it. I'm thinking, yeah, I do think at least with some people it helped. Now, there's a lot of confusion over what CBD is still. The average person, you know, they're confused. Is it THC? Does it get you high? What the heck is it? But I will say it likely did, among key segments of the population, move that needle forward with acceptance or at least tolerance of cannabis in general, you know, becoming legal. And I think it's also just the more states that legalize, whether they're big ones like New York or small ones, you know, it just creates that momentum. So every state that has legalized, you know, that's another feather in the cap, right? And more people see that after legalization, whether it's medical or recreational, all the fears and worries people had going into it, you know, most of them are not true. So, and then people start realizing, oh, my someone in my family or my friend or my neighbor who I respect and admire or love, if it's in, you know, your family, whatever, they are using it. And yes, CBD is part of that, right? And so it kind of erodes further that stigma and that resistance to cannabis as a whole.
Well, and I want to also ask you, because you were covering, you know, the quote unquote Vapegate when that occurred, and the fact that that only, you know, occurred in the illicit market. Do you think that that helped, you know, not necessarily the general public, but more legislators look at cannabis and say, hey, it's more dangerous to have a criminalized product that's already going to be prolific across the spectrum in the streets versus a regulated product where we can kind of control what's being tested and how it's being distributed to the general consumer?
Absolutely. I think there are certain individuals and certain groups of people who did see that and come to that conclusion that may not have before. And that's another thing. If you look back, there's a lot of things that could have sunk this industry, pushed back the momentum, delayed the rollout, changed public opinion, because this is a drug that's been demonized, a plant that's been demonized. And You know, if alcohol had all of a sudden become legal and it wasn't, and it was completely underground for a long time, imagine all the headlines and that would be coming out of that with car accidents and fights. And so when you look at the vape scare, you know, that had the potential to hurt the industry's reputation and to, you know, turn back the clock in some people's mind. But to your point, I think once people started to learn what was going on and what was truly happening, it did move them forward with, okay, even if I don't fully support legalization in some form, it is better to have this at least, you know, regulated than to have things like this crop up, which could, you know, exacerbate over time and spread to other areas. So yeah, I think that did give a push for oversight, for regulations, and for legalization.
And now, you know, kind of the craziness after the farm bill is seeing the new isomers of cannabinoids, such as, you know, Delta 8, become prolific in unregulated, you know, states, as well as regulated states. I mean, you know, here in California, you know, we have Delta 8 and Delta 10. Cannabis industry isn't too happy about it. The state's not too happy about it. What do you see as the future of not just, say, those chemically converted isomers, but more the totality of the alternative cannabinoid market?
I think is what we need to see is the further opening of the door with research and science behind this, which really hasn't occurred in meaningful ways, you know, throughout, you know, the last 100 years because of the attitudes towards marijuana. So there are going to be negative aspects. There are going to be things that we didn't expect, that are going to become trends that lawmakers didn't consider, like what you just mentioned. And I think that further should fuel the move to really research this plant and find out all the different components of it and how they work with the human body and including the drawbacks. And so I'm not sure how this Delta situation is going to play out because, you know, this could, you know, one of the fears that I have is that this could cause some lawmakers or regulators to put the brakes on things and say, whoa, this is a lot broader than we thought, right? And what's the next thing that's going to come out that we didn't know about? So I'm really hoping that doesn't have a negative effect, especially federally, as we're finally getting some momentum for change, for acceptance at the federal level and reform. There is a danger that, you know, some people will look at this and say, okay, this is much more difficult and widespread and comprehensive than we thought in general what this plant is. So we need to put the brakes and study it more for another decade.
Well, and education's important for the cannabis industry as a whole. You know, I remember what, 5, 6, I mean, maybe a little bit longer than that, maybe 10 years ago. You know, you don't really see a lot of concentrates. You saw hash, you know, bubble bag made hash, you'd see flower. Nowadays, you know, you have CBG, you have THCV, you have all of these alternative cannabinoids. We understand now that THC isn't the end all be all of the plant. It's more the totality of the entourage effect. Are you hopeful that that type of education continues? Because I think that, you know, to me, understanding more of the plant material versus it just gets you high versus, you know, hey, it has antidepressant properties. It has anti-anxiety properties, depending on the terpene profile. Do you see that research is helping tip the balance?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the exciting part about all this is that, you know, you could argue that we haven't, you know, gone past the tip of the iceberg in our understanding of the plant and all these cannabinoids. And there's a lot of potential that could be unlocked if we had more research and science. And that then creates a foundation for more understanding, for more acceptance. So you are starting to see the discussion in some circles change. As you mentioned, it isn't just about THC. It isn't just about THC and CBD. There's a whole other world out there that that we're just kind of, you know, breaking through the surface to understand. And anything we can do with a science and research base to further understand that is going to help it gain widespread mainstream acceptance.
Are you hopeful? You know, I know that Chuck Schumer had mentioned that he wanted you know, the Senate to put forth federal legalization this legislative session. I know that Biden is kind of, you know, historically anti-cannabis. You know, Trump was historically anti-cannabis. Are you hopeful that for a possibility of not of legalization? I don't necessarily think that that's possible this legislative session, but are you hopeful of some type of legislative easing for the cannabis industry through maybe banking reform, 280E reform? You know, something to help the cannabis industry say, hey, You know, we're not ready for full legalization yet, but we do understand the trials and tribulations that you're going through, and we want to help try to start a bridge at least.
Yeah, I think we're a long way from getting passage of some type of bill like Schumer introduced and is working on. It is a well thought out bill in the sense that the lawmakers working on that understand the industry. And you can nitpick or even have significant disagreements over aspects of the bill, but it was very comprehensive and very uncharacteristic of a lawmaker introducing a bill as sweeping and significant as this. So I was encouraged that you know, they seem to have done their homework. They know what the issues are in the industry, and they attempted to address them. Again, whether you argue this is a good bill or not, it is a lot better than it could have been, a lot more thoughtful than I thought it would be. However, yeah, I think, you know, getting over the hump of passing something like that, something that would pave the way for legalization fully in states that want to, we're a ways away from. And I don't know if that's 2 years or 10, you know, hopefully it's not 10, but there's still a lot of pockets of resistance in key areas that could sink bills like that and that will sink bills like that. But what it is, you know, the way things work in this industry, you have to take baby steps. And in between those baby steps, there's a bigger stride, and there's some more baby steps and then a bigger stride. And then you eventually get to where you want to go when it comes to kind of the wheels of legislation. So this is significant in the sense that you've got, you know, the Senate Majority Leader introducing a bill to legalize cannabis. I mean, that's enormous, right? And so anyone hoping that we're going to see that pass, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I think that it's a big long shot right now. However, it's one of those, when we look at how these things play out, it's one of those moments where it elevates that discussion, it gets it on people's radar, and the next step is something a little bit further, hopefully a lot further. So I do think it's significant in that way. I am hopeful that we'll see some other type of federal reform, you know, from now through next year. I can't put any odds on it because, you know, ask me on the day, right? I mean, it's so hard to figure out how people are going to vote and support or come out against these type of things. I have been shocked on both sides. I've been surprised we haven't had any federal change when we see what the industry is doing, right? I mean, $20 billion in sales, and it's, you know, you got a terrible banking situation. It makes no sense. So I'm surprised there, but I've also been surprised on positive developments. As I mentioned at the start of this conversation, the number of states legalizing and the pace of it, you know, after the election, you had all these states legalize, all of them with measures on the ballot passed. And then it wasn't even that, right? It's since then, you've had another handful of states legalize recreational so that, you know, you've had more since the beginning of November to now than you had in the previous 3 years combined. So, you know, there's that momentum, and you never know when that's going to tip the scales federally. But I'm hoping, and I'll echo what I'm sure you've heard and many people have said is, you know, really, I think the key right now is if we can get some kind of banking reform through, what I feel is that you create a pseudo legalization environment where you open the door enough for a normalized industry to move forward without some of these massive hurdles that it faces now that aren't common in other industries. So, you know, I think that would be a significant change. I think it would be immensely beneficial, and it would open the door to new opportunities, to new players. It would also bring some negatives depending on where you sit. But that's where my hope lies, is that we'll see something like that. Now, again, the chances that happens are kind of up in the air, but I think it's our best shot at something significant and tangible happening.
Well, I mean, taking a look on the international stage, I mean, we've seen Canada legalize, we've seen other countries go ahead and legalize. Do you think that it's possible that we see an international push for legalization that forces the United States to federally look at it faster than it would like to?
You know, that had been my hope in the previous couple of years. When you mentioned biggest surprises, the development of the international cannabis industry and the fact that there is an international cannabis industry was massively surprising. You know, you've got more than two dozen countries that have legalized medical cannabis federally, and yet the U.S. hasn't, right? But as those states started to legalize in recent years, there was a big wave, and it was surprising. I mean, you've got, you know, South America, and you've got Europe, and all these countries started going that way. And here, the U.S. biggest market, most opportunities, that's what everyone is talking about. But it's it's behind on the international front because it's illegal. And then you had Canada legalizing recreational federally, which was massive. So I don't know. I was hoping that that would lead to pressure or a push in the U.S. to change the federal laws. It doesn't seem to have moved the needle very much at all. So I'm not sure at what point all these forces combined, other countries legalizing, maybe big banks pushing officials to open the door so they see get opportunities, the business community, all that, all of these are going to work together. It's not going to be one or the other that causes that to happen. But I do think if we continue to see more countries legalize, it will put some type of pressure on us to do something.
And I think one thing that might be interesting is if you look at, say, the Netherlands, which is like the traditional cannabis capital of the world before, you know, the U.S. or California's Proposition 215. When you're looking at Amsterdam starting to have, or not Amsterdam, sorry, but the totality of the Netherlands start to introduce, you know, seed to sale tracking to help kind of self-contain the industry, allow for quality assurance. Do you think that the cleaning up of the Netherlands in terms of the way that they do their business model will help push the rest of the EU towards some type of legalization? I know we have some countries in the EU that do have medical laws on the books, but I know that they had been hesitant because they've kind of seen what's happened in the Netherlands. Do you think that that might help tip the scales there?
The Netherlands could. I kind of echo what I was just saying, that I think anytime you have a good example of legalization, of tracking, of regulations working, it's gonna push things forward. And the amount it pushes things forward varies, but the more we can show as an industry, as a community, that we can do this responsibly, you know, we can do this right, you are going to start changing the nature of the discussions. And the Netherlands is absolutely part of that. I mean, it has that history and that stigma of, ooh, we don't want our city to be like this, right? So you clean that up and you do it well. And I absolutely think in the EU, other leaders are going to look to that and say, with other things that they're looking at, and say, okay, let's move forward with this.
Well, and I do want to ask you about one part of legalization, because it is part of your keynote panel, your opening keynote panel, actually, which is Reality Check, a deep dive into U.S. cannabis legalization. Is your business prepared? And when you are a business owner and you're looking at, you know, states start to fall, some states are trying to make, you know, separate deals for genetics or other types of transportation or, you know, something here on the West Coast, I think they're working on. How can your business best be prepared, in your opinion? Obviously, your panelists might have different opinions on how they think you could be best prepared. But as Chris Walsh, you know, president and CEO of MJ Biz, looking at the industry, how do you feel a business can best be prepared?
You know, I think it wasn't that long ago we struggled with this at MJ Biz too, but you couldn't really plan more than 6 months out in this industry because things were unpredictable and they could change drastically. They changed for us, but also if you're, you know, touching the plant and you're in a certain city or state and the regulations shift. There's so many things that change. New markets open up. You know, all these trends and things we've been talking about that have played out over 10 years are unpredictable. And you can't put all your focus or your strategic approach behind one scenario, right? So is what you have to do in this industry to prepare for legalization is, A, you have to think about it now. And you actually had to start thinking about it yesterday. And, basically having a scenario, not a specific one, like federal government does this, this, and this, then we do this. You need to prepare for a broadening and an opening of the market and a normalization of it. And it, whether it might be banking, it might be whatever, it might be letting states decide, it might be something we are not even talking about today. But you have to prepare for a day when there's going to be more competition. There's going to be much more savviness coming into the market. How is that going to affect your business? And how are you going to capitalize on the new opportunities that you may not be able to see right now? So I think this goes to, you have to foster innovation within your company and make sure that that is something you're constantly doing, not just once a year at a strategy meeting or when a situation changes. You need to create a better culture of innovation so that you're always having new ideas, and then you can adapt as the things change. And you got to structure your entire business that way to be flexible. One of the, you know, kind of tenets of business in these days is being flexible in general. It's long gone are the days, right, where you have a career and you're at a company for 40 years and you run the company the same way you did for 40 years if you're an executive. That's gone, and it's, you know, it's even more important to be flexible, to be on top of your market, to really understand the changes occurring and how people, your clients, are adapting to them in the cannabis industry versus other industries, because that's the speed of acceleration and uncertainty in general is, you know, exponentially higher than another industry. So it's really, it's not a specific move you can make or a specific strategy. It's really setting your company's foundation up so that you can adapt, you can be flexible, you're always in touch and have your finger on the pulse of the changes in the client base that you serve. And then having the infrastructure to be able to capitalize on opportunities and also to move away from things that maybe were successful for you in the past, but aren't going to be successful for you going forward. And that's the hardest thing to do running a company. Yeah, I've been successful for blank years. We know what we're doing. We're going to keep doing it this way. Well, there comes a time where that doesn't work anymore. And if you don't realize that the fundamentals have changed of your product, of your focus, of your strategy, then you're going to be in behind, and it could be detrimental to your company.
Well, and I only have you for a couple more minutes, and I do want to ask you, I know you guys have announced the Hall of Flowers experience at MJ BizCon, which a Hall of Flowers, for people that don't know outside of the California market, is a business-to-business cannabis plant-touching trade show here in California. I don't think you guys have done something like this before, so I'm kind of curious, what was the impetus to do this, and what can attendees expect at the Hall of Flowers experience at MJ BizCon?
Yeah, that's a really great partnership, and we started talking to Hall of Flowers in the spring, and you know, we understand what they do, and in California, you can have a model of hosting an event where you have samples out there, right? You can't do that in any other state. You can't do that in Vegas, where we host our event. So you can't have flower or THC-infused products outside of California. So Hall of Flowers has created this great community, these great events where you can do that because it's allowed in California. So we just figured, look, our events are different and we're the big giant annual show, right? And we have all the ancillary companies on there, and we have some brands that are national and just want to get their name out, but we don't have a lot of exhibitors in particular that are the brands of the retailers. And those two communities are part of the backbone of the industry. And we wanted to do a better job at our event of bringing them together. And so they all come to the show, they all come to Vegas, but again, we need to serve them better. And so we started talking to Hall of Flowers, and both sides kind of agreed that, look, we play in the same industry, but we have competitive strengths that are different. And if we combine them, you know, they're going to be strong. So we still won't have THC products on the show floor in the Hall of Flowers experience, but you know, we're going to leverage their strengths and ours to really bring these two sides together, the brands and the retailers, and create more meaningful connections and conversations between them so that they can, you know, each drive their businesses forward, each side, and then, you know, establish those connections that help them down the road that they can utilize in other ways when they can, you know, find ways to show each other the plant, their products, they can visit each other, whatever. So we're really excited about that, and happy we could team up with another leading brand in the cannabis industry.
Any other big announcements? I know you guys are about right now about a month and a half out from the launch of your event. What can people expect outside of the Hall of Flowers experience? You know, MJ BizCon is obviously known as, again, the leading cannabis you know, trade event in the world. And you guys are definitely known for your seminars. I can't tell you how much time I've spent listening to the best people in this industry talking about what they do best. What can people expect this year, especially as a return to in-person events?
You know, we're really put a lot of time and effort into seeing how we can do this safely, how we can make this meaningful as we come out of the pandemic. And, you know, so A, having an event is important safely. But we're trying to streamline in a lot of key ways. We're not going to have a million side events and pre-conference things and luncheons. We do have some of those, but it's really about doing what we do best, that core, and making sure that we can do it in a great way this year and get everyone together. So it's, you know, the words we use, you know, it's the deal flow, it's the networking, it's the education through the conference content, and all of that. And that we have put a lot of time into making even more meaningful this year. However, the new element, I think, in general, is the celebration aspect that, you know, we're getting people back to the first time through MJ via MJ BizCon. And we want to also create that buzz around the industry. People are excited. They're ready to get back out there. I think people's businesses took a step back in some key ways. They weren't able to make the connections they were used to, get in front of potential customers or clients. And so we want this to be as much of a celebration as everything else that I've mentioned, and recapture that energy and of the industry and where it's going, and really celebrate the fact that, hey, look, we made it through this difficult period, all of us, right? And the industry in many respects thrived, and we have a lot to be hopeful for. So I want to harness that energy and get people excited about the year to come and the years to come, and to be talking about how do we shape this industry going forward? How do we make sure we do this right? And so that's really where my focus has been, and the company's in helping this year different, in our 10th anniversary, a different kind of event than we ever envisioned because of the pandemic, and getting everything right back on track and where we all left off in 19.
Excellent. And just for everybody out there, to let you know, MJ BizCon is returning in person. Make sure to get your passes now. It's going to be October 19th through the 22nd at the Las Vegas Convention Center in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Been speaking with Chris Walsh, CEO and president of MJ Biz Daily, as well as MJ BizCon. Again, Chris, really, really appreciate your time and look forward to finally going back to MJ BizCon in person.
Absolutely. I hope to see you there. We're ready to rock.
We would like to thank Chris for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about MJ Biz Daily and MJ BizCon by visiting them online at www.mjbizdaily.com and www.mjbizcon.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.